Friendship by Amanda Watkins.
My name is Edie Turner, and I suppose my story started when I met Jack. I was working in Woolworths on the shop floor. I'd started there when I left school, and I really liked it. There was a lovely atmosphere, and we all got on well. Then I met Jack at one of the firm's socials. He worked in the storeroom, unloading goods and putting them on the correct shelves. He was quite exciting, really. Tall and good-looking, and rode a motorbike, and all the girls fancied him in his leathers. We started going out together, and it was fun for a while, but then I found I was pregnant. Although it was the late 80s, we were in a small town and it didn't go down well, especially with our families. So Jack said we might as well get married. Not very romantic, and it was a bit of a rush job in the registry office. We managed to get bumped up the list for a council house because of the baby. But 3 weeks after the wedding, I had a miscarriage, and then I lost two more in the next 18 months, and after that, nothing. So I guess it was never meant to be. It didn't seem to upset Jack as much as it did me. I was devastated. Life just carried on, much as it had before. But Jack became very bored and restless. He'd always liked to drink, and we used to go to the pub on a Friday evening. But he started going more often on his own. His timekeeping had always been a bit haphazard, but it got worse, and he was late for work more and more often, and eventually got sacked. This didn't help his mood, and he drank even more, and frequently told me I'd ruined his life. About 3 years after we got married, a lovely couple moved in next door, Brenda and Joe. Brenda was a hairdresser, Joe was a fireman. They had no kids by choice and never regretted it. They were a bit older than us, but we hit it off straight away. Well, I say we hit it off. Brenda and I became really good friends, and I liked Joe a lot. But although Jack was always civil towards them, he kept his distance, just grunted a quick, "Hello, all right," and moved on. Jack's drinking was becoming more and more of a problem. Apart from the fact that he was getting a bloated look about him and was moody and surly, we just couldn't afford for him to keep buying beer and whiskey the way he was. We had my wages coming in, of course, and he was getting unemployment benefit, but we still had rent, rates, electricity, food, and all the other regular bills to pay. We rowed about it constantly. He'd buy drink from the supermarket or the off-licence rather than go to the pub all the time. He seemed to think this was a brilliant economy. Brenda and Joe knew we were having problems, although we never really talked about it. But it got a bit more obvious when, after a particularly loud row, Jack hit me very hard across the face. I tried to stay indoors for as long as I could, but on the night before the bins were collected, I slipped out after dark to put ours out and bumped into Joe under the street light. He looked at me and just said, "Thought so," and went indoors. We went from bad to worse after that. Once he'd started being violent, he carried on. If he'd been drinking and didn't like the look of his supper, he'd hurl it at the wall. I couldn't afford to leave. I could barely afford to stay where I was. Brenda was the only person I could talk to, and I had to talk to someone. Although it was the mid-90s by then, there weren't the refuges and helplines there are now, and the police weren't very sympathetic over domestics. So that I could pay the bills, I began putting money aside in envelopes, and I'd learnt to keep them in my handbag. One Saturday, I came in from hanging the washing out in the garden to find my bag open and all the money taken from the envelopes, and he'd gone out to buy more booze. Oh, that was it. I was so upset. I went out in the garden and sat and cried. Brenda came out with a mug of tea. She didn't say anything, just held my hands. "I can't do this anymore, Bren," I said. I just can't, but I don't know what to do. I can't see any way out. Honestly, for 2 pins, I'd chuck him under a bus." She looked at me for a minute and then said, "Well, why don't you?" I laughed. "Tempting though it is, Bren. For a start, we don't often go wandering round town together these days. And secondly, I don't see why I should go from this rotten life to years in prison." "Well, then make sure nobody finds out what you did," she said, making it sound so simple. "Leave it with me," she said. "I'll give it some thought." Well, I didn't think any more about our conversation. I was more concerned about where to hide money for bills. And I did begin to wonder if I could perhaps get a fixed fee appointment with a solicitor to find out where I stood if I did leave. Then the following Saturday, when I was in the garden hanging out the washing and Jack was sleeping off yet another binge, Brenda hissed at me to go over into her garden. "I think I may have found the solution," she said, "but you'll have to be very brave." "I'm desperate, Bren," I said. "Will that do?" When Brenda wasn't hairdressing, it seems she liked nothing more than reading whodunits, especially murders. She'd read all the Agatha Christies more than once. Dorothy L. Sayers, Val McDermott, Lee Child, Ian Rankin, the lot. She was obsessed with murder mysteries. Now, I've been going through a lot of my books and I've jotted down various ways of dispatching people, she said. "Have a look and see what you think." We spent the next couple of hours going through the list. Too messy, too noisy, too complicated, too obvious, too risky. We were left with two options. I had to decide. Also, could I actually go through with it? The taking of another person's life. Jo knew nothing of our plans. We didn't want to compromise anyone else. But when to do it? I was just going to have to do it when I thought he was sufficiently drunk and out of it. Brenda thought he was slowly killing himself anyway. His skin was puffy and yellowing. He was always out of breath and he looked really awful. I'd taken to sleeping in the spare room and I heard him come in late the next Saturday night. There was the usual door slamming, stumbling around and swearing and the stagger up the stairs. Then silence. It wasn't so silent when I went into the bedroom. The snoring was almost rattling the windows. I looked at him lying there, bloated, snoring and dribbling. I'd married a dashing evil Knievel, and he'd turned into a grotesque caricature of Homer Simpson, yellow skin and all. I sat on the side of the bed for a while, looking at him and thinking of our life together. Where were the happy days? Where were the times we could look back with fond memories? The few good times we had been overshadowed in my memory by the drinking, rows and violence. He was a sad, pathetic figure now. So, with tears running down my face, I pulled the pillow from under his head and brought it down over his face and held it tight. His arms jerked up once or twice and I felt him try to move his head, but then he was still. I stayed like that, holding the pillow over his face for nearly 5 minutes, and then lifted it. To my horror, Jack's eyes were open, but they stared blankly. I closed them, lifted his head, and slid the pillow back under it. Then I went back to the spare room and waited until 7 in the morning. I dialed 999 and said I thought my husband had stopped breathing. The paramedics arrived, said they thought he'd been dead for a couple of hours. There was a post-mortem, of course, the result of which was that he had cirrhosis of the liver, an enlarged heart, and had a lot of alcohol in his bloodstream, and therefore the cause of death was natural causes. I did have the odd twinge of guilt, but that was mainly because all I really felt was relief. Oh, the next few years were peaceful. I liked living on my own with my best friend next door. Poor Joe had a massive heart attack and died about 3 years after Jack. Brenda was devastated, of course. Then she and I went on coach outings together, joined a local ladies' club and pottered about in our gardens. Brenda was older than me and was gradually losing her eyesight because of macular degeneration. One morning she tripped and fell down the stairs, landing awkwardly and breaking her back. She was in hospital for weeks, but there wasn't a lot that could be done for her, and they needed the bed. She was paralysed from the neck down. She was moved to a nursing home, and I was with her most days. One day, when we were alone, and I was reading to her, she said, "Help me, Edie. Please help me. You know what to do. Don't let me go on like this. I can't move. I can't see. What's the point?" "No, Bren, not you. I couldn't," I said. "You must," she said. "I'm begging you, Edie. This is a living nightmare, and I can't do it myself. You wouldn't let a dog suffer like this. Please." I knew she was right, but how could I? She was the dearest person in the world to me. I looked at her, unable to move, and the world slowly growing darker for her. I kissed her on the forehead and pulled the pillow out from under her head. She smiled as I lowered it over her face. "So that's my statement, officer. Where do I sign?" "I'll let you fill the date in. Thanks for the tea. Can I go back to my cell now, please?"
Friendship was written and read by Amanda Watkins. Production was by Dave Baldwin. Theme music, Adventure, was from bensound.com.